Hello and welcome to the Weird Flipper Post podcast. My name is Jason McEwen and I'm joined by Tim Penfold to talk all things Bradford City. On this episode, we're going to talk about recent performances, tactical decisions and whether City have a genuine chance of making the playoffs. And we've also got the best of your questions for Tim, which we'll go through along. Tim, no Alex tonight. Do you know where he is?
I don't actually particularly, but you know, we did know in advance that he wasn't going to be able to make it and we couldn't reasonably reschedule because everything is particularly hectic and busy for us, particularly with the sheer amount of midweek City games. But you know, we have searched, can reassure listeners, we've searched high and low to find a replacement who would contribute the same amount of wit and football knowledge to the podcast. I thought I'd found one, but unfortunately my four-month-old is having their nappy changed at the moment, so I can't make it.
Oh no, bad timing, eh? You know, but needs must. Yeah, but yeah, you're right, it's probably a similar intellect level, isn't it? So yes, definitely. Yeah, in all seriousness, Alex having a few issues with his kid. All good, sure be fine, but we wish him well and we wish Nell well as well. So it's just me and Tim for this episode. Where to begin, I think, Tim, really? I think we have to talk about the Doncaster game, which me and you sat there together watching. And I think there's a couple of times during the game, second half especially, where we were sort of saying to each other, this is bad. I'm not sure I can remember it being this bad. So, you know, 24 hours on as we record this from the game, what are your reflections now of the match and the performance?
I mean, it was, for a large part, utterly unmemorable. We were mostly outplayed, didn't really create much in the way of chances, and then eventually, after changing everything up, we snuck ourselves an equaliser out of nothing when, if Doncaster had actually gone for it, and we were saying this during the game, you know, they were slowing things down, time wasting, trying to take the momentum out of it, and we're just thinking, you're the better side here, push on, get a, if they pushed on and got and went for it, they could have killed that game off and we wouldn't have actually had the chance to get in, you know. So we showed good heart to rescue a point, but we didn't show much else, and the less said about that refereeing performance, the better.
Yeah, it was a pretty of a shocking, wasn't it? And it didn't help when it's a game like that that's quite bitty to end it with a referee who's just blowing for everything, just really added to what was a terrible spectacle, I think, for large parts. Tactics were really interesting, and I guess I use the word interesting quite kindly there, because it was one where it was quite questionable really what Graham Alexander was trying to do, and I think the main headline probably was the fact we had Clark Odar in central midfield having played so well as a wide forward. Can you understand the thinking from Alexander and what he was trying to do there?
I think he was trying to both fit Tyreek Wright into the team and keep Gilead at wing back, but it didn't really make any sense. McDonald and Odwar did not work well as a pairing, and they both picked up bookings in the first half, and they were actually the deserved bookings, because Odwar let someone get wrong side of him and made the foul, which is what happens when you play someone in central midfield who's not used to playing in defensive midfield position. It'll be their positioning that's the problem. And then he gave the ball away sloppily, and McDonald stopped the counter and took a booking as well. So it didn't work from that perspective. It meant that there was just no real bite in midfield. McDonald is okay in that regard, but he's much more Elliot Watt than Richie Smallwood, isn't he? He's a passer first. So whereas if you pair either of them with Gilead, because once we moved Gilead in field, it actually worked more. Gilead's got, you know, he gets stuck in, he's good defensively, puts in a bit of bite, runs around a lot. You know, he provides that off the ball stuff, which is why he worked well with Watt in the past. Whereas it reminded me a bit of when we tried both Watt and Cook, and then when we tried the Watt, Cook, Pritchard midfield three for a bit as well, where there was a lot of technical quality, which meant that on the ball it was good if you could get us on the ball, but it didn't really work off the ball at all. And last night we also couldn't get on the ball that much, in part because the tactics were launch it up to Cook as much as possible. So we had two technical midfielders and just bypassed them constantly.
Yeah, and it's such a weird one, isn't it? And Kevin McDonald is an interesting player because he's had some exceptional games, I think, for us since he signed in the summer. But then he's had other games where he's been incredibly poor, and I think that often the common denominator in his Leicester performances is who he's alongside. And when you're playing a central midfield two there without a ball winner, you're expecting McDonald and Odoir to do that role, but it's absolutely not their game, certainly not Odoir's. It just meant that they both suffered really from their games, and you got to a point in the second half when obviously you've taken off McDonald in the end. You could easily have taken either of them off based on that performance, and actually it was better when Gilliard was there actually playing alongside to be that ball winner and someone there doing that to then play the ball to Odoir to then be a bit better, more attack-minded. But it just feels like the balance is just all wrong there at this moment in time, and it's a real problem that, understandably, Gilliard, you kind of want him to play left wing back because he's been so good there, but there's no one else to fill in there for him. And you know, it's something I talked about in the match report in terms of we haven't really got many options there. We let Ryan East go in January, let Emmanuel Osadebi go in January. There's Daniel Oyegoke, who kind of had a weird spell where he was playing there under the end of Mark Hughes' days, but and he's still at the club, still contracted to Bradford City, I should say, on loan, and even though he's injured and don't know if we're going to see him again this season. But it feels like a bit of a problem there, doesn't it, really? And obviously Richie Smallwood being suspended meant that was added to, and that will change on Saturday with Smallwood back. But there is a bit of an issue there where we're lacking real depth in there, which means that we're relying on players who maybe, like McDonald, shouldn't necessarily be playing every week, but we don't have a lot of options there, do we?
Yeah, and this is, to be fair, exactly the same problem that we had in the summer, in that we have built around a 3-5-2 in our recruitment, and in the 3-5-2 we've got one holding midfielder, which is McDonald or Smallwood, or at a push Gilliard, and then you've got two people pushing further forward, whether it be Walker or Patterson, Gilliard, Odoir, you know, those were the options, and that was the way it was that we set it up. Only we've changed to 3-4-3, and we changed either quite late on in the window or right at the end of the window, you know, and suddenly that means you need two sitting midfielders, and therein lies the problem that we had at the start of the season. Playing it, we had Smallwood alongside Patterson for a while, and that didn't really work, because if you're playing the 3-4-3, you can't really have a proper attacking central midfielder like Patterson in there. It leaves a big gap and a lot of ground for the defensive midfielder to cover. So you either ask Patterson to not do his natural game, which at what point, why are you playing him, or you have a big gap which leaves us very vulnerable to the counter, which is what happened. So at that point you've just got three options there. You've got Smallwood, you've got McDonald, who can't really play every week because he's, you know, he's not young, he's had fitness problems in the past, and so on, and we knew that when we signed him. And then you've got, you know, you can play Gilliard there, but Gilliard has also been playing wing back, and he's the main cover for either wing back side at the moment, really. So yeah, we're short on numbers just because the tactics have shifted, and we are now playing 3-4-3 with wide forwards, and suddenly we are short of defensive central midfielders, which we weren't when we were playing 3-5-2.
Yeah, and obviously, on the wing-back situation, we know that Lewis Richards has been out injured, but apparently he was travelled to Barrow when that game was called off at the last minute, so the intent would be that he would potentially have been on the bench that day with Gilliard perhaps at wing-back, but certainly was nearing to fitness. Then 10 days on, presumably he would have been okay to start in the game against Doncaster, but obviously Alexander chose to pluck Gilliard there instead, and feels in a way like, is there a way we could just clone Gilliard? Because we need two of him at this moment in time, don't we?
Yeah, very much so, because you need one in central midfield, one wing-back, and it is there. But yeah, this was a combination of wanting Gilliard at wing-back and trying to fit just that one more attacking player in, only it would have made more sense to play either Wright or Odoir at left wing-back and put Gilliard in the middle, because otherwise, you just lose the centre of the pitch completely, and then that's gone. It reminded me a bit, actually, of, if you remember that England side of Sven-Göran Eriksson in the early 2000s, where he tried desperately to fit all of his attacking midfielders into the midfield. You know, Gerrard, Lampard, Beckham, Scholes, Joe Cole a bit later, when the way to get that system to work, balance-wise, was to drop one of them, and play someone like Owen Hargreaves or Michael Carrick in to balance the midfield out. And it ended up not really working because you had midfielders, attacking midfielders, play too deep to actually do what they were good at for their club, and actually less effective than putting a specialist in there.
Yeah.
So this is basically what happened tactically to a degree. He tried to sort of force too many attacking players in, gutted the middle of the park doing so, and also might have knocked Odwell's confidence a bit because he, you know, he was playing well.
Yeah.
As a wide forward, he'd had some really good games, and then had suddenly stopped. And then, you know, suddenly Blitz played in a much deeper role, which doesn't suit him, and has a poor game, and that might knock him.
Yeah, that's the concern, isn't it? And you know, we've seen in previous games, the Sutton, which was the last league game before that, obviously, we had Sam Stubbs playing in central midfield to try and fix this problem, which worked to a point because he's more of a ball winner, obviously. But obviously, with the issues we've got at the back, with Matty Platt out injured, not sure what's happened to Ash Taylor, seems to have dropped off the face of the earth a little bit. Then obviously Stubbs has to fill in at the back, which then means he couldn't play there, so it's a problem. And I think as well, the other side of it, Tim, is obviously we could see last night a real problem of winning back possession and getting forward and passing it. The wide forward positions really struggled last night, and we'll talk about Tarek Ryan in a bit more detail later because we've had quite a few questions about him, so we can talk about that. But also Callum Kavanagh on the other side really dropped his performance, having been really good of late. So do you think it was a system thing, or do you think it was a personal performances thing last night where just something the wide players weren't as good?
I think a bit of both. A lot of the time it was the ball was being lumped up to the front line, and it was expect Cook to win the header and win and feed off the second ball, and that wasn't really working. Whereas we had the ball players in midfield, we should have been playing through the midfield. But Kavanagh in particular, basically every single thing that he was trying was just going wrong. He was just having one of those nights where it just didn't work for him. And he's had a couple of those games. I don't think I've seen him have an average game for us yet. He's either looked pretty impressive or pretty poor. You know, first couple of games I wasn't actually convinced at all. Then he grabbed a goal, grabbed another goal, looked really good against Wickham, and then was back to being poor again. So I think there hasn't really been a middle ground. He's been quite inconsistent. No wonder Alex is a fan of his, you know? Inconsistent wide player. Favourite sort of player. But yeah, he just had a poor game. He had an off game last night, and then we, for some reason, replaced him. I mean, Smith did score the equaliser, but that was when we moved him up front, playing him on the left of a front three and then on the left of a 4-2-3-1 for a short period. That's not really his position either, so it didn't really make sense from quite a lot of things.
Yeah, it didn't, and I guess we've got a lot of wide forwards, and that's something that's been a conversation today, and the reader comments on the Woodford post-match report, that's been mentioned as well, that there's a lot of players there not necessarily taking the opportunities that are there to play in their wide forward positions, which probably in a way makes it more maddening that we moved Clark Odwar out of the position there when he's been doing so well there. But obviously Adam Wilson did really well when he came on the sub. The Harry Chapman and the Bobby Poynter situations are very interesting because Chapman eventually came on and set up the goal, but doesn't look like he's very really in favour with Graham Alexander's favour, and Bobby Poynter certainly doesn't. And there's probably, it was interesting last night, sitting next to you watching the game, I'm not sure what made you more angry, the referee and some of his decisions, or the moment when, as you say, Tyler Smith came on, played on the left wing, and Bobby Poynton remained an unused substitute. It's a strange one, isn't it?
I mean, I was actually thinking I'd have brought Poynton on the right and Chapman on the left at the point that we brought Wilson and Smith on, and Wilson did have a pretty good game. It's just we've got quite a few left-footed wide forwards at this point, because we've got right Wilson, Odwar and Poynton. But it just didn't really make any sense. I mean, I don't think Chapman's been used particularly well anyway. He, you know, firstly, particularly for Chapman and Poynton, they do not suit the style that Alexander has implemented in most of the games. They'd have actually done pretty well in the Wickham game when we were playing football, but when we're launching it as high and hard as possible and hoping that they pick up off the scraps that bounce down off Cook, that's neither of their games, is it? So, you know, there's something there. But also Chapman has mostly ended up being played on the right, and I think he's better on the left, especially in a system with wing backs where you've got the wing backs providing the width. Therefore, you want to invert your wide forwards, as we have done quite effectively recently with Odwar and Kavanagh on their, you know, coming in on the onto their stronger foot. And Chapman has barely played in that position, except for about the last 5-10 minutes last night, after, because he came on, played number 10 for about 5 minutes, and then swapped with Smith, and we went 4-4-2. And then we got the goal, suddenly. Then it suddenly worked a bit, because he was playing in his best position. It just, again, feels like it's been he's been in the wrong position for quite some time of it, because Poynton was playing left at about the same time for a few of those games, and I just thought it made no sense.
Yeah, it didn't do it at all. And then the other bit up front then is we come on to Andy Cook, who had another difficult night, really. I think he only had one opportunity on goal, which is one he basically created for himself in the first half with a really good bit of play. But otherwise, lots of high balls up to him. Didn't look great from his point of view. It must have been really frustrating. And I think it is frustrating for fans watching this when we've seen how well City can play in that Wickham game when Cook wasn't playing and we weren't knocking it long and we passed it on the deck a lot more. To then bring Cook back in and play as we did, back to doing long balls and launching it forwards, and especially from Kieran Kelly, just all night just seemed to be sending it up towards Cook and very aimless. That is a frustration, is it? Because it just feels like we've got a player there, we know what he's capable of, we know how good he can be, and he just feels like we're using him badly really at this moment in time. And a lot of the criticism is coming his way, when actually I think the criticism should be from the teammates of, this is not how you get the best out of Andy Cook.
We're using Andy Cook as if he's James Hansen or Verdane Oliver, aren't we? Where we're using him as a head on a stick, where you launch up and hope he wins the knockdown, and he's decent aerially, and his link play is reasonable, especially around with, you know, chest and feet, you know, he can link quite nicely, and he's a really good penalty box goal scorer, with where you supply him with crosses, with passes, with through balls, with anything that he can get on the end of. That's where he got all his goals last year, because we played, you know, much less direct. We had people supplying him and it worked. Whereas now we're just expecting him to be the main target man who wins every flick on, and then, but if he's doing that, then he's not in the box as often, because he's coming out to link play a bit more, and he's less effective. If we were going to play that style, we may as well have kept Oliver, because Oliver's better at winning those headers. He's less of a goal scorer, much less of a goal scorer, but he is much better at winning those headers. So, yeah. And it feels a bit like the defence and, to a degree, midfield were taking the easy option a lot of the time when Cook's on the pitch. Because when we were playing Smith against Wickham, we could not launch his head, because you know that's coming straight back, and everyone on the pitch knows it. So we took the more difficult route, we played it through the midfield, we passed it well, and then, yeah, once Cook is back, it gets back to taking the easy option because he's there, launching at his head, and it's not actually that effective, because, you know, he's reasonable aerially, but not, you know, he's not going to win every header. And then it comes straight back and it doesn't work, and it bypasses the players with technical quality that we have actually picked in the midfield, as well as meaning that the wide forwards aren't getting the ball in a good position. They're getting it where they're competing for a knockdown, for scraps, rather than getting the ball to feet in a position where they can run at people and create. So, yeah, not working. And Cook's getting the criticism, but we saw how to use him last season. You know, you could... There's this entire playbook of how to get the best out of Cook that we did last year. Just do that.
Exactly. And I think that's what's so frustrating, is it? Because, you know, they go back to the Wickham game and how well we played that night. And you went away thinking, if Cook had played that night instead of Smith, we'd have won that game, because Cook would not have missed the chances that Smith missed on the night. But then when you bring him back into the team, and then you just change your style again and go long again and undo all that great work in that Wickham game when you did play it on the deck and everything was so well balanced, it's frustrating all round, really, I think, for everyone involved, really, because there should be the Wickham game should be the template for how we should be playing now, and that should be the instructions for the players coming out into the pitch. It's all very good to mix and match it. I get that, and at this level we should be doing that, and sometimes it does need to go long there. But to do it all as much as we're doing it when Cook is on the field, it's just frustrating to watch, and his goal output is nowhere near the level it was last season. So no one's benefiting from this. There's a good piece in Chris Kamara's autobiography. I read his new one, but his old one we did about 20 years ago. He told the story of when he was Bradford City manager in the playoffs and playing Blackpool, and they lost the first leg of the semi-final 2-0 at home, and Ian O'Mroyd was up front and was double marked on the day and just cut off the supply, and City were totally ineffective. And in the second leg, he took the decision to drop Ian O'Mroyd. And he said the reason mainly was because he didn't want the players on the pitch to be looking for him and sending that long ball, and actually to try and pass it around more, get the ball into the final third before getting into the box rather than knocking it as long as they were doing. So he said it was a tough decision and it was really unfair on their own right to an extent, but it was something for the good of the team that then helped. And obviously on the night then they won the second leg 3-0 and they get to Wembley and they get promoted. Now, I'm not saying you drop Cook at this moment in time, but he's clearly more important to City, I think, now than Ian O'Mroyd probably was back then. But is a sort of similar dilemma at this moment in time where if you're Alexander and you had another striker, who I'm not sure Tyler Smith's the answer, do you say, actually, you know what, we can need to leave out Andy Cook because it's just causing bad habits from his teammates? Or do you go, no, the players just have to be more disciplined and better than this?
I mean, I would be looking at getting the players to be more disciplined and better at this, because maybe bringing Smallwood back in and having someone else like McDonald who can pick up the ball off the back three and potentially do a bit more with it might help. But we had those technical players in us, they still got bypassed. So, yeah, I think I'd just be working on just don't launch it forward all the time. Get your players to just not do that.
Yep. On a positive note, we haven't beaten in 5 games still in the league, and defensively we continue to be excellent. We obviously conceded for the first time in a while against Doncaster. The goal looked maybe offside, certainly borderline, but all in all, performance wise at the back, and Alex did a brilliant article about this on Winterfell Post last week about the improvement there. It is massively considerable. And Sam Walker again last night, although he conceded, had another really good performance, didn't he? And he's been a revelation, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely won me over the last few games. I think on the last podcast I was saying, you know, wasn't fully convinced by him yet, but some of the things that I think we'd seen about him being a bit sort of slow to command his box were just him getting used to a new defence. And since then, he's been excellent. He kept us in it at 1-0, really. He made a couple of good saves. At least one tip, fairly spectacular tip over that I remember. And yeah, he's been an impressive signing. And yeah, the difference really is, you know, we've seen what happened with Lewis, where his form had, with hindsight, completely collapsed. I think at the time we were just assuming that at some point the Harry Lewis of last season would have come back. And instead we got a decent sum of money for him and have replaced him with someone who's playing better at the moment. So, yeah, long may it continue. I suspect, you know, he won't keep it to this level of form, because it's unlike, you know, keepers don't run at this level forever. But it's been a very useful signing and a good piece of business.
Yeah, it's certainly working out very well. Then if we talk about the pitch at this moment in time of Bradford City and the remainder of the season and where we're at. So after the draw against Doncaster, Bradford City remain 15th in League 2 at this moment in time. After 34 games they've played, they have 47 points. If you're looking at kind of the playoff picture and where they might be, they are now 9 points off Barrow, who are in 6th place at this moment in time on 56 points, having played 34 games. In 7th place, the final player spot at the moment is Walsall, who have played 35 games and have 54 points. Morecambe are also in the same amount of games played, 35 and have 54 points. And Gillingham also have 54 points, having played 36 games. So, at Bradford City, have 2 games in hand on Gillingham. Then you've got Wimbledon, who 36 games, 51 points. Crawley, 34 games, 49 points. Newport, 35 games, 49 points. Harrogate, 35 games, 49 points. And Notts County, just above Bradford City on goal difference at the moment in time, 34 games, 47 points. So as it stands, Bradford City are 7 points off the playoffs, but do have a game in hand on Walsall and do have a game in hand on quite a few teams above them. Are we being a bit too optimistic, Tim? Do you think there is still hope there, or do you think it's just a bit too much of a long shot?
I think really it's an outside chance, isn't it? I just don't think we're consistent enough with the way we play. We can put together some good runs, you know. MK was an excellent win tactically. Wickham, we played really well but lost. But, you know, we don't produce like that week in, week out. And, you know, even Sutton, where we won, we weren't exactly impressive. So, yeah, it's one of those where I think we just aren't consistent enough to go on the sort of run that we're going to need. And it's, you know, it's a bit frustrating, playoff-wise, because you just named these whole bunch of teams, and there's two of them where we've just had games cancelled, where they were out of form going into those games and we were in form, and 6 points for us from those games, and rather than two postponements, and we're suddenly looking in a very healthy position at that point, because especially because we'd have taken points off immediate rivals. But yeah, I just don't see that we've got quite enough in us to do that.
Yeah, and when you look at the running, it's interesting, partly because we have a lot of home games coming up, and I'll just go for the fixing in a second in the final 12 games. But also, interestingly, when we get to the end of the season, we end up in a situation where four of our last six games are actually away at this moment in time. So it's definitely now or never, I think, for Bradford City. And obviously the home form, as ever, isn't great. Only six home wins all season from 17 matches. But it's going to be a matter of, if you're going to be challenging there for the playoffs or make a little bit of a late run, you've really got to get the points on the board now. So next you go to Accrington on Saturday, who are in poor form as well, and they've obviously just sacked John Coleman, so an interesting moment to play them. Forest Green at home on the Tuesday after that. Forest Green definitely picking up a little bit under Steve Cotterill, but second bottom of the league. Leaders Mansfield then come to Valley Parade on Saturday, and then on the Tuesday after that, it's a rearranged game against Notts County. So you've got three home games in a week there, basically, for City, which is half of their remaining home games. So that's going to be really, really interesting where they go from there. After that, on the Saturday, they go to Harrogate away. Then they got the Easter weekend where they got Tranmere at home on Good Friday, Grimsby away on Easter Monday. Grimsby, who are still in a bit of a relegation trouble there, they're looking over their shoulders a little bit, albeit they did beat Sutton United at the weekend. Sorry, Forest Green at the weekend to ease the pressure a little bit. And then you come to those final six games, basically, final five games, which is Gillingham at home. Then you've got Barrow away, Salford away, Walsall away, before ending the season at home to Newport. There's quite a few teams there, isn't there, Tim, that are in and around us and who have got that, like us, that little bit to play for still, where they could still make the playoffs.
Yeah, and that is what makes me think that we still have, you know, an outside chance, because we are going to be playing basically all of these teams around us. You know, the only one, you know, Mansfield are the only actual top team who we've got left. But everyone else could be, you know, in playoff contention mostly. Although that's most true of most of the division, is it? Considering how far down this playoff race goes. So that, yeah, I think it's just how many wins can we get against the teams around us? Because it turns almost every game into a six-pointer, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. It feels to me like we just got to keep it alive as long as possible, because I just don't think, with everything at the moment with the club and the mood around the fans is very still on edge, and I think there's a lot of people who are not clearly not coming to games at the moment, because last night was another one where there was no attendance announced, which is obviously says a lot. So clearly there, you know, there's that kind of, that mood is not great, and they've got season tickets to sell, and I just don't think you can be in a position where you've got nothing to play for with weeks of the season left to go. So to me, it almost feels like the longer they can still have the outside chance, the more that's still not a good achievement, because it's still not great for the overall season. But I think that's the best we can almost hope for right now, because it does seem incredibly implausible to think that we can go on such a run where we get into the playoffs, you know, because it's not just catching up, it's then going at a pace that keeps you in there at that point, then with lots of challenges. And realistically, you could probably only lose a couple more games really now, really, and that's unlikely that we'll only lose a couple more games, because as you say, although results have been better recently, the performance is still not that convincing, and it's not like, you know, the margins are still quite thin, and therefore it's easy to see us go on the wrong side of them again quite quickly as well, isn't it? But I think if you can get through the Easter weekend and you've still got a bit of an outside chance, then I'm not saying it forgives a lot, but it does help the mood a little bit to end the season where there's still a bit of hope of going, well, been a tough season, but we've ended it okay, and there's something to build on for next season a little bit. So we'll see what happens on there. In terms of, we put some questions out, well, we asked on Twitter basically for your questions for Tim and Alex. Obviously Tim is here, but Alex is not here to answer them, so it's a shame, because there's some questions about wingers, which I'm sure Alex would have loved to have had a go at. But I think one to start on, Tim, is Tyrick Wright, who I said we'd come back to talk about, because a few people have put questions on there, very much in the Jonathan Ellerton that says, have we managed to get Dion 2.0? And there's another question as well that's sort of making that point, that it feels like we've ended up re-signing a player on loan who had a really good first spell, but is not delivering that second spell, and we kind of been here before, haven't we, Tim? And it's probably a little bit concerning with Tyrick Wright at the moment, because he does not look like the player of last season at the moment.
I mean, a key thing to point out, and this is why I was a little concerned about where we were going to fit him in, players aren't just sort of plug and play, most of them. Tyrick Wright played really well for us, mostly on the left for 4-2-3-1, in a fairly possession-based patient team that would then get him the ball and release him at people and use his direct running to speed things up. And then he had a couple of games up front towards the end in a diamond system alongside Verdane Oliver, you know, as the quick man in a big man quick man pairing. And it seems like we signed him based off the fact that we think he could play the second striker in a 3-5-2, which is slightly different. And we were going to pair him with Andy Cook, who he'd never played up front alongside as a pairing. He'd always been on the wing when we played Cook, which, again, not quite the same thing tactically. The style is very different, because instead of it passing around the midfield and he gets the ball at his feet to run at people, he's basically trying to get flick-ons, knockdowns, etc. He's playing a bit narrower, and on the other side, actually. He mostly played on the left for us, so when he's been playing as a wide forward, he's played on the right. So the role he was playing in does not exist in our current setup, not quite. And the tactically, it's different in terms of sort of style, in terms of directness and so on. And that's even before you get into fitness issues. He went off injured in his first game. He's had some time to get back. He's not been playing that much, so that's going to be an issue. And confidence issues. You know, players aren't just machines, they're people as well. So it's a whole bunch of reasons why this happens. And this is honestly why big signings often go wrong. You can see them playing well in a certain system, in a certain team, in a certain league, and then think, oh, we'll buy them and put them there, without thinking whether you're actually replicating that. I mean, that's basically one of the entire reasons why Chelsea, having spent £1 billion, are rubbish, is because they have not taken any of that into account and just thought, we'll sign this good player and put them there, and then they'll just magically reproduce everything that they were doing. And yeah, so quite a lot has changed sort of style-wise, tactics-wise around the club. And yeah, he's not replicating that form. It'll be interesting to see what he does between now and the end of the season. But I can imagine if, for example, we still had Mark Hughes in charge and had re-signed Tyrick Wright in January, he'd be doing better just because he'd played better in a Hughes team before.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're 100% right. It's a different system, very different approach, and it is difficult for him at this moment in time. And you just hope that he can come good between now and the end of the season, because we all know what a good player he can be. You can see why he went to Plymouth when he did a year ago, when that option came there, but it clearly wasn't a good career move, because he didn't really play very much there. Obviously, Plymouth club on the up going to Championship, and that was a big step up as well. And you know, it can be a long way down sometimes, kind of, at this point in time. And you know, hopefully he has a good end to season, and who knows where we go from there. Lancaster Bantam asks, do you guys think the same as me that Chapman and Poynton will both leave in the summer? Just quickly on Poynton, as we understand it, we think City have an option in the favour to keep him if they want to, in terms of how that deal works. So it's not the same that he would want to leave in the summer, and we would lose him, but we could keep him if we want to. Although it's still a question of whether Tim Graham Alexander would want to keep Bobby Poynton, and then certainly Harry Chapman, you probably definitely more questionable, isn't it?
I could definitely see Chapman leaving. I suspect he's on quite a decent wage because he was signed from higher up and was, you know, one of the big signings of the summer of 2022 and hasn't quite lived up to it, although we've seen his quality in sort of fits and starts, mostly when he's played wide left. I could see him leaving, and if he can get himself consistently fit and playing somewhere that suits him, I could see him being one of those players that leaves and suddenly starts playing really well after he's left us. But I don't think he suits what Alexander is trying to do tactically, and so I can imagine him leaving. Poynton, if we did not take up that option on that contract, I'm going to be honest, if I was Ryan Sparks at that point and Alexander said, I don't want to take up that option, I would be overruling him and taking up that option, because Poynton has the potential to be both a very good player for us and a saleable asset down the line. And I think he's being mismanaged and mishandled at the moment. It doesn't seem to make any sense. I mean, I don't think he's a good stylistic fit for Alexander's style of what we might generously term football. You know, he's much better in a side that's going to play possession football, that's going to have players that he can link with, and he'll get the ball to feet and cause problems that way. His best runs of form for us came when he was drifting in from the right with Jamie Walker at number 10, Gilead pushing up from midfield, Halliday overlapping. You know, he would link with those players and create quite a lot. And I'm not sure we quite have that in the 3-4-3 there. But yeah, I would be going all out to keep him at this point. To be honest, we should have got him on a long-term contract in about October.
Yeah.
And I don't see why we didn't. I don't see why we haven't tried to do that, really. So, yeah, I would be very disappointed to see him leave. Although it also wouldn't surprise me if he left on loan, if we were just trying to protect the asset at that point and thinking, you know, he doesn't really fit with the current. I mean, if you're doing long-term planning, he doesn't really fit with the current manager's style, but the way we go through managers, you know, either the next manager or the one after that is going to be one who's really committed to playing football and going full on for youth development, and they might really want Poynton at that point.
Yeah.
And who knows, that might be, what, 6 months, 12 months until we're at that manager,
yep,
the way we go through him?
He'll be made for him at that point, won't he? So we shall see on that one. We have a lot of questions of people asking, you know, which players out of contract we think we should keep or let go. I think it's fair to say we'll do an episode of the podcast later on in the season about all those kind of things, because there's a lot to talk about there. So we'll park those questions for now, but absolutely we'll come back to them at a later point in the season. Keith Bruce asks, between 1985 and 2004, we spent 13 of the 19 years in the top two divisions. Obviously, since that point, we've been out of the top division now for nearly 20 years. Do you think the way the finances of the Championship have rocketed, that City could ever compete in the Championship again and become a Preston or a Millwall, or is a good League One team our limit? What do you reckon, Tim?
Preston and Millwall have quite a lot of outside investment, as does anyone who plays in the Championship. I mean, you look at Rotherham, who last season, they've just done their accounts for last season, they made a £1 million loss in the Championship, and that's after player sales, where they made a reasonable, well, £750,000 profit and so on. And by Championship standards, that's incredibly good financially for the results. You know, their wages were a sensible amount of turnover, they didn't massively overspend, and their wage bill was £8 million less than the nearest club to them.
Wow.
And this season, they're bottom of the table by some distance and going down. You know? That is a club that is trying to run by itself in the Championship without outside investment or parachute payments. And yeah, we'd get in a bit more money than Rotherham, because we've got bigger crowds. But what's that worth? Another 2 million quid on the wage bill that we might be able to do? We'd still be 6 million quid off the next highest. So without serious outside investment, the championship, as it stands at the moment, would be impossible. And, you know, we could go up, we could stay up for a couple of seasons, then we'd drop back down again, you know, like, and then potentially be a yo-yo club between the two, like Rotherham, like Barnsley, those sort of clubs. But beyond that, it's, you know, even Luton had outside investment, and now they'll be all right, but they still had money going into the club from their owners, a few million quid a year. And so it's basically impossible to be a self-sufficient club and climb through the leagues once you get past League One.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, and I think this is the problem, isn't it, with the current model we've got now, is that it's just impossible to see us ever being able to compete at that level because of the self-sustainable model and the fact we're not going to throw a lot of debt at it and stuff like that. It's just how can you compete there? And the interesting bit as well is next season the new TV deal comes in, where significantly more money coming in for all of the 72 clubs, but the proportion that Championship clubs get compared to League One and League Two goes up even further. So we all get more money, but they get more money than us, which therefore makes that gap even wider. And it's yeah, I think it's history's gone against us a little bit these last 20 years, hasn't it? It's not the time to be on the wrong side of that Championship League One divide, because I think every year now it gets harder and harder to make up that gap. And certainly when we're in League Two as well, it just becomes really difficult. And obviously, if we get different owners and a different approach, that might be different, and the ambition should always be there. But it does feel like we're the odds are stacked against us quite a lot at this moment in time. So he also had a few questions about the pitch as well. David says, what do you think the possibilities of the investment in the hybrid pitch are for the future seasons? Would it take a ground share, or can the money be raised through sponsorship and fan funding? So yeah, I mean, obviously it's slightly weird, strange how that's worded, but I think obviously in terms of the pitch stuff, obviously that is the problem we've got here, isn't it, right now? It's a massive issue.
Yeah, my understanding on a very limited level, because I know basically nothing about pitches beyond they should probably have some grass on them and probably not retain quite so much water as ours does, is that we have serious issues with the drainage. And but doing one of those hybrid pitches, I mean, it might help for a bit, but you'd still have the issue with the drainage, because that wouldn't solve the issue, because you'd still have the issues of whatever's under the pitch that makes the drainage very difficult without properly going down and digging the entire thing up. And then they're very, very expensive compared to, you know, League Two standards. And we could end up with that sort of pitch, but then not a team that could play on it, because you'd be taking potentially half a million quid out the budget to do something like that. And that might even be a cheap estimate. So, yeah, I don't really know what we do with the pitch, because I can see the logic of, well, we want to put everything into the as much as we can into the first team budget. But if the pitch is awful and we have a bad winter, and, you know, this has been a very, very wet winter, and it's badly timed rain for quite a lot of it as well, because, you know, the Stockport game probably should not have gone ahead. It was absolutely soaking. Salford, I think, same sort of thing. But we had to get the games ahead, and then that's helped completely destroy the pitch's ability to sort of sustain itself and drain off properly. We saw it again at the weekend against Notts, well, in the council game against Notts, where it just had completely flooded at that point. But I don't know how we fix it beyond spend a huge amount of money, at which point that's coming out of the playing budget, because with what we've got at the moment, it's not coming from anywhere else, is it? So I don't think there's a particularly easy answer here. And I suspect what we will have is a temporary bodge combined with complaining about to the people who did the drainage work in the summer of 2018, because apparently, according to some quotes that people have been digging up from the TNA articles at the time, that should be good for 10 years and clearly has not been. Because otherwise, we're just going to keep ending up with this scenario every few years where the pitch stops actually draining and we either have games cancelled or we have to work out stuff like tidal movements to work out whether we're attack which end to attack in the first half, or whether we want to attack the deep end or the shallow end.
Yes. We had lots of great questions, and thank you for sending them in. We had some on themes that we've already talked about on this podcast already, so we won't go through those ones. But just a couple to end on. Malcolm Carr says, do you think it does or should make a difference to his game management decisions if the boss is watching the game from high in the stand instead of pitch side with a different view and perspective? And interesting on that, on the game against Doncaster, was for the first time since Graham Alexander decided to start watch games from the press box, he came down in the second half and was on the touchline. And that's probably, I think that's also the first time we've been losing at half time since he's been making that move. So interesting, Tim, that he did decide in the second half to sit down and to go down to the dugout. I mean, it's difficult for us to answer that question, isn't it? But what are your thoughts on the fact that he is up in the stands?
I always feel like I get a better view the higher up I am. And because I sit normally in the top tier of the cop, I just for midweek games I normally go and annoy Jason, who's bottom you Jason in the top bottom tier of the cop instead, because the person I go with doesn't do midweek games, and there's normally some seats around you. But I get a much better overall view of what's going on from the top of the cop. And I can imagine, honestly, I'd want to be really quite high up to get that view, because you get a better idea of the patterns of play, especially compared to the touchline. But then potentially your ability to change things is a bit more limited. But I can see why he's doing it. You know, it makes a lot of sort of logical sense. But then there's a feeling that coaches need to be on the touchline to be yelling at their players all the way through and micromanaging everything that they do and telling them, you know, you must do this right now, do it, and so on, which I'm not sure how effective that actually is, or whether it's just sort of placebo effect almost coaching, where we always do it like this, so therefore we're going to keep doing it like this.
Yeah, I think that's right, isn't it? It'll be interesting to see what he does in the next game, if he's up in the stands again or if he's down on the touchline. Obviously, Accrington, you don't really get a great view from the top of the stand anyway there. So
we're going to hire a crane for him.
Yeah, good idea. And the final question comes from Richard. Nicknamed Thunder, very famous in the Midland Road stand, is good old Thunder, quite a character there. And he asked quite a provocative question here to end on. Why are so many of our supporters so miserable? And I think it is a fair one to talk about, really, because
have you watched any of our games recently?
Yes, but it does feel like the atmosphere at the club right now is really not great, isn't it? And it was very notable at the game against Doncaster. No noise at all, was it? It was so flat, wasn't it, really? And it's not the first time it's felt that way over recent weeks.
I mean, the Wickham game had real noise, you know, but that's in part because everyone who wanted to make some noise was all together, and in part because the performance and the occasion led to a good atmosphere. You know, it's a feedback loop, isn't it? You play well on the pitch and you'll get some noise, and then you'll possibly play better on the pitch because of the noise, and then you get some more noise and so on. We saw it happen over the Parkinson era and the early McCall section. But yeah, people are just, and we saw it even happen last season at times. You know, the atmosphere towards the end of last season was pretty good, and then it just fell apart again this season. But yeah, I think it's just because of where we were and how quickly we dropped under the new ownership. And there's just at that point, you know, we were two seasons in a row playoffs in League One. We were comfortably a top half League One club at that point. And now we're mid-table League Two. And some of that is Edin Rahic. But since we hit League Two again, we've not really, apart from last season, threatened to do anything about that. And of course the atmosphere's rubbish. The atmosphere was absolutely rubbish in the Taylor era too, when we were battling relegation from the league. We are, you know, people quite reasonably feel we are operating at a level below where we should be, and that doesn't generally make for a good atmosphere, and you need something to change that. For in the early 2010s, that was Parkinson and the history makers season, and that managed to turn things around spectacularly, but that was a pretty improbable season. And so, you know, last season we almost had that, and if we'd gone up and or continued to take that momentum into this season, then yeah, that would have worked. That would have potentially been good for the atmosphere. And I think the other thing is the split between the northwest corner and the cop doesn't do much for the atmosphere. All I hear is, they almost end up competing with each other rather than actually creating an atmosphere together. And all I hear from some bits of it these days are songs criticizing the fans who aren't singing. And that's not going to help, is it?
No, it's not, is it? It's not. It doesn't entice you to join in, doesn't it? If you've just been told you're a bad supporter for not joining in and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting what happens in terms of obviously they put out a survey, the club, and talked about getting the atmosphere section moved to the lower tier of the cop. In the corner where actually me and you were last night, actually, is where they're looking at doing it. I think there's a definitely good merit for moving where they are. 100%, they need to change that. I just don't know if they're going to be able to move into a part of the ground where it's long established of people who've had season tickets for many years, and they're going to necessarily be happy with that inconvenience of suddenly having the drum right next to them and a lot more people around there who want to make that noise. As silly as that might sound in terms of wanting people around making noise, I think people get used to a certain setup really, and either they get told to move and find the season ticket seat elsewhere, which if you've been here in that spot for 10, 15, 20 years even for some people, isn't something you're going to be happy about doing. And also, like I say, you've got that some of that presence of like the drum, which I love the drum, but I wouldn't want to be sat right next to it, put it that way. So if that doesn't work and if the vote's against that, where do they go from there? To me, the logical place is put them back where they were in the back of the cop. There seems to be some, I don't know, some disagreements there going on, isn't there, where they don't want to go back there. I was in the Bradford then for the Wickham game. That was really good fun. I enjoyed that a lot. But you can see why you wouldn't want to do that all the time, because the facilities are very poor in that area of the ground. I think there's extra, obviously, costs for opening that part of the ground up as well, which the club are trying to save money. And I'm not sure putting fans further away from the cop is a good idea either in terms of improving the atmosphere. But it's definitely an issue at this moment in time where we've got to find a good home, I think, for some really well-meaning people who are trying to make the noise of Valley Parade, where they're actually part of things rather than as separate as they are right now, which is definitely a problem. So we'll see. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this podcast, and thank you very much for listening. We've tried things a little bit different tonight. Wasn't planned that Alex would not be involved. Obviously, hopefully Alex is back for next time, but we just thought we'd go a little bit more like condensed with what we talk about, and hopefully if we can do that, it might be more manageable for us to produce them a bit more often than we are doing at this moment in time. So please do let us know what you think of this edition of the podcast, and anything you'd like to see in future ones, and hopefully we can strive to deliver that. Thanks as ever for Tim for your support and for getting involved, much appreciated. And we will do another podcast very soon. Games coming thick and fast, but we'll find a slot where we can talk about all the Bradford City things and hopefully some better form for Tyreek Wright and some better football that's not up at Andy Cook's head. So all for now, thanks very much, and we will see you soon. Hello and welcome to the Width of the Post podcast. My name is Jason McEwen, and I'm joined by Tim Penfeld to talk. Oh, God, sorry, I can't say your name wrong.
Can't even say my name
right. That's not a good start, is it? It's a long day.